recording. I think I'm recording onto both of them. Can you see yourself?
I see on the phone.
Yeah, because that's the capture of that.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
We're driving. This is like on the launch pad of some Apollo rocket heading into outer space. We've got our vehicle. We're launching ourselves into podcast space.
This
vlogcast space.
This is me over here. I'm looking down at myself being recorded, and I'm being recorded up there. So this is an experiment. It could go horribly wrong. They could be playing this on the evening news tonight, honey.
Yes.
Like old couple.
That image looks good.
Old couple decides to, you know, record themselves.
Speaking of old couples, I notice more and more people look at us with an endearing smile. Like, look at that cute old grandparent couple. Like, look at that cute...
Who looks at us like that?
Look at that elderly couple. They're so cute. They're obviously been around together for so long. They're so cute. That old couple.
Well, I don't look at us like that.
Of course we don't. We just think of ourselves as being 25 years old.
On YouTube, I feel old just because I'm sure, like... For YouTube, I just picture every single person commenting is just like somebody on 4chan. And, you know, 4chan could be people as old as our president. You know, in light, our president is 70 years old. And that's pretty old for a president. Hillary would have been 69. So that's also pretty old for a president.
Well, and you've got the Soundgarden guy dead at 52. And so I tweeted that 52 is the new 95. Because you think about it, 52 years old. These days, in a world of collapsing global biosphere and harsh economic reality for millions of opiate addicts in America, 52 is a long time. To make it to 52 now is a major accomplishment in America.
Well, we don't know how he died, Chris Connell of Soundgarden. I think... He was definitely my generation. When I was at UCLA, we were definitely listening to Soundgarden and Kurt Cobain and Nirvana, you know, and that was a big moment when Kurt Cobain killed himself. And some are saying on Twitter, who knows if it's right or wrong, but they're saying that Chris Connell committed suicide and or he overdosed on drugs.
Like I was saying, though, to make it to 52 these days is a major accomplishment, I think. So, you mentioned 4chan earlier. And 4chan, I think, aside from being the architects of the most devastating political memes of the 2016 election, remember Pepe the Frog started Hillary's mental breakdown and the rise of the Trump movement in a big way. They've also been very active in the cryptocurrency market. You know, those guys, as I understand it, have been involved with Dogecoin, D-O-G-E.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole crypto space is now worth over $60 billion. And a year ago, it was worth less than $5 billion in total. I think it was worth less than $2 billion in total.
I remember when we first covered the fact that it was... now a $1 billion market.
Yeah, and the Bitcoin's dominance has fallen below 50%. You've got an interesting situation developing because there are approximately 3,000 billionaires in the world, and they control the global media space, global market space. They've come under attack as being kleptocrats, oligarchs. But now, with... You know, the crypto market is pretty small, really. So we're going to see the rise of the crypto billionaire class. You know, you're going to see as many crypto billionaires as you have in the fiat currency billionaire world. So what will they do? You know, there was a great story out on Bitfinex. Bitfinex got a Mt. Gox-like hack, but they solved it by coming up with an innovative solution. to repay folks who had been hacked, and they did it in a way that was completely outside all regulation because there's no regulatory body that regulates Bitfinex as such. And everyone is very happy with how they resolved it. So it shows that cryptocurrencies can, and the community can operate outside of the legacy regulatory environment. They can create billions, tens of billions, soon to be hundreds of billions of dollars worth. And I would imagine at some point $1 trillion worth of wealth. Now, what do these people do?
I don't know. You tell us, honey.
Well, they have a chance to remake the world in their image. Decentralized. Decentralized and...
Do you think the people are ready for a decentralized world?
Yes, I do, because centralization is the bane of our existence. It's decentralized, and it's a good anarchy. It's good, decentralized good anarchy, which has always been the driving force of humanity and nature for millions of years. So we're getting back to our true spirits, I think, outside of these centralized authorities, which brings us to the daily, let me ask you about this. This the daily Russia slam by the mainstream media. Time magazine, I think, has a cover now of the Kremlin taking over the White House this week. Another slam at Russia. The Democratic approval is hitting new lows. Doesn't seem to be politically expedient, but what do you think?
I think it's twofold. I think it was a major psychological, emotional, deeply traumatic experience for Hillary Clinton to lose to a buffoon. And I know people are going to hate on me for calling him a buffoon, but he is a buffoon. The fact that he can't stop tweeting, that he's like a maniac tweeter, it suggests he's a buffoon. So, you know, she lost to him, and I think that was the most humiliating experience of her life. If I were running against him, had been running against him, and invited all these people like Jay-Z and Beyonce and, I don't know, all these celebrities and famous people to come up on stage and rally with me and woohoo, let's party, and had, you know, rented out the Javits Center for the glass ceiling so I could say, wow, I broke the glass ceiling, and everybody comes celebrate. Like, I'm... And she had already, like, picked a designer to redesign the White House and all this stuff. Like, if I had done that and then, lost embarrassingly, I would come up with a conspiracy theory that some Superman who's able to hack any single election on Earth, he can see through anybody's phone, he's mightier than the CIA, NSA, FBI, DIA combined. He's Superman. He's Putin man. You know, I would definitely adopt that. I would say, yeah, that's the reason why I lost. Not because I had a crappy platform and I had no charisma or personality. I would rather have that. Like, that's more comforting when I next see Jay-Z at a party and say, that guy, you know, like, if it weren't for Putin man, I would have won, obviously. And so I understand her thing, but then the likes of Rachel Maddow were also traumatized. You could see that on the live show that night when they were covering the election, that that they were traumatized as well. So I think, however, their ratings went up, and it's all about the ratings. It's all you saw even. The Washington Post was celebrating that they had their highest ratings since the whole, that scene from, what's that film with Robert Redford, All the President's Men or something, that they were sitting around the data looking at the highest ever viewed click-through story was this story, some Russiagate-involved story involving Trump. So it's all about the ratings and business and, I think the fact that many shows on RT were the only ones that got it right. I think people like Lee Camp, you know, the ones that cover more of the political shows, the political content like Lee Camp or Tom Hartman or Watching the Hawks, they were more balanced actually in their coverage. They covered all of the angles of the election. Most of them were actually pro-Bernie. But the fact that they got it right and MSNBC and CNN got it so wrong, I think it's a whole bunch of elements coming together to push conspiracy theories. And the Democratic Party themselves, I believe they think Benghazi is the reason why they lost. The conspiracy theory pushing of Benghazi, I think they think that, well, if we do our own sort of conspiracy theory, that we'll win. But the fact is, the Republicans had been laying this groundwork for 20, 30 years. So it's a genuine grassroots organic sort of movement rather than a top-down conspiracy pushing angle.
Your point about the ratings, you know, is a good one, because it was ratings-driven phenomenon that put Trump into the White House, that he was given incredible airtime, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of airtime, a lot of times just shooting an empty podium, waiting for him to show up. Les Moonves at CBS was saying how he might be bad for the country, but we're getting great ratings. So now the ratings pendulum has swung toward Trump bashing and Russia bashing, and we see the rise of Maddow. Her ratings are high. Stephen Colbert is now out gunning Jimmy Fallon. Remember, Jimmy Fallon before the election rubbed Trump's hair, and it was kind of a buddy-buddy moment, and now he's being pilloried for that, and Stephen Colbert is taking on a more pointed, edgy attack on Trump. His ratings are beating everybody else in nighttime. But what is a bit disturbing is that America has a checkered history. You know, it's built on a genocide of the native population. We have the ugly experience of slavery, Jim Crow, the continued incarceration of black community, and the attempt to wipe out the black community. You know, America's got a pretty ugly underbelly. And you see that with these bigoted, xenophobic attacks on Russia. And it just, you know, reminds me of when I was a kid watching the Civil Rights Movement in America and seeing black kids being blasted away with fire hose down south. And you see all these images. And this is, unfortunately, a big part of the American character. And if they have somebody to kick in the teeth, somebody who they perceive as being not able to fight back, they very sadistically will go after folks in a bigoted, racist way, and it's quite ugly, quite ugly.
Well, I mean, the Democrats, we know, are all about identity politics at this moment, and like really targeting specific identities. And the white Christian alpha male, which Putin is, leaves them very comfortable. Look, I mean, Erdogan was in Washington, D.C., visited the White House just yesterday or the day before. And he was invited by the Atlantic Council, which is, you know, central to this whole Russiagate story. They're the ones that are involved with pushing a lot of the Russiagate story. They're the ones that are pushing the CrowdStrike story. They're connected to CrowdStrike. So they invited Erdogan, who has, by the way, locked up like 200 journalists in the past 2 or 3 months. Now, you don't see anybody protesting saying, oh, what are we having this dictator here for, and blah, blah, blah. Because he's also Muslim and he's dark-skinned, and I think they're not as comfortable with that. It's also announced yesterday that Trump is doing a $350 billion weapons deal with Saudi Arabia, where women can't even drive. Like, I am noticed, it's the woman driving, and controlling the karma grip here, because the king, the Kaiser, is he can't do all that stuff. So I'm doing it, but you know, no complaints. No, none of the progressives up in arms saying, why are you selling $350 billion worth of deals to the Saudis? This is a surprise. This is a shock. This is an outrage. No, they're not doing that. And I'm still learning how to use this karma grip, too. You know, it's sometimes it wobbles all around the place because I'm not quite
sure. Yeah, but it has that gyroscopic steady cam thing, right?
Yeah, it's called the Karma Grip. It's called a gimbal. So, you know, so they're not objecting to the deal to Saudi Arabia, who, by the way, has just, like, is genociding Yemen, and something like 75% of the people of Yemen need food support now because of the constant bombardment and the bombing of food supply lines.
There's no ratings. That's the key, isn't it? There's no ratings in showing that.
Yeah, I think probably it's because it's uncomfortable for the American population, I suppose, to... You could make it ratings. Anything, you know, the media can instantly create, like, all of a sudden Gaddafi's a bad guy, all of a sudden Saddam Hussein's a bad guy, and we wipe them out and reap them publicly and then hang them. But, you know, you could do that.
But any story that is in the Middle East is complicated because there's so many cross currents and so many actors, and it's been around for so long, and no one's been able to untangle that Gordian knot of political intrigue. The Russia story is very simple. America's already got the Cold War to draw from. They've already got the Hollywoodization of this conflict with the Americans TV show. Putin is a fantastic character for Hollywood to build a story around. You know, in the Yemen story, you don't really have the same kind of personality. Erdogan, who was in Washington, D.C., his bodyguards were beating up tourists. They were committing violence.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I'm saying is that, like, it has to do with that identity politics. And, for example, Ted Lieu, who is a Democratic senator or congressperson from California, so Chinese-American ancestry, and he was writing, he tweeted that his, I think, 11-year-old child had asked him, "Daddy, is President Trump Russian?" And Ted Lieu said, "How scary is that?" And I'm like, oh my God, like, imagine if he had used any sort of other nationality. Is he Arab? Remember that moment when John McCain in 2008 was confronted by a woman at a town hall who said, "I just don't like this Barack Obama. He's Arab."
Yeah, but that shows media saturation. So that same 11-year-old kid, when daddy says, "What do you want for lunch?" will say, "McDonald's." They'll say, "Where do you want to go on vacation?" "Disney." They only know what they see on, they're being saturated, carpet bombed, their mind, with media saturation. But then to somehow suggest that there's a narrative involved, that our children are being infected by these evil monsters from afar, it is like ascribing to your 11-year-old media-saturated Egypt child, carpet munching, you know, not munching.
So everybody resorts to either a homophobic or a racist thing. That's what we have on our television.
Not carpet scrambling.
What's carpet scrambling?
Carpet. You know, kids are on the carpet. Some 11-year-old kid is on the, you know, running around. To say that this 11-year-old kid is somehow internalizing and intellectually making this this intellectual leap that, there's a foreign evil
entity.
Yeah, but that's
what, you mentioned the 60s. In the 60s, we had the kids would say the same thing. "Daddy, is he black?" Like, and that would have been the acceptable racist terms at that time, that to question whether or not we should trust a black person in the White House. Here we have whether or not we should trust a Russian because they're white and Christian and it feels like acceptable. But it's still the definition of xenophobia is, you know, I wrote back to Ted Lieu and I said, "Oh, wow, your family is like a mirror opposite of the Trump family, who are afraid of Mexicans and Arabs." So it's, you have a lot in common. So, you know, it's no different, but the ratings are there, and that right now it's acceptable.
Yeah,
it's
always been
about ratings.
Just as long as people understand when they are entertainingly vilifying another group of people based on bigotry, that it's a lot closer to lynching and genocide in intent than it is by just writing comedy. You know, like, I'm going to do a satire, I'm going to do comedy. It's not funny when you are ascribing to a whole group of people this bigoted narrative and making up these stories about existential threat. you know, that it taps into, unfortunately, in the U.S., a very ugly history. If it were a different country, you'd have a different, you know, way of looking at it. But in the U.S., you have, unfortunately, a very sordid past when it comes to these things.
Well, that's right. And, you know, if it had been about principles, we would have seen it applied by the same outraged people when Erdogan, who arrests journalists and throws them in prison, or the Mexican president, where, again, two Mexican journalists were assassinated last week. No, in the past week, this week. Two on one day. That makes seven so far this year. Almost no concern at all. I looked at Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, their Twitter stream. Nope. They're concerned about the Turkish journalists in prison, but nobody at all concerned about the assassination of these journalists. They say that normally, if a journalist were assassinated in Russia, they would, of course, be deeply concerned. Is that racist against Mexican journalists, that they don't care about Mexican journalists, and their outrage is only confined to the white Christian journalists in Russia? Is that a case to be made?
Right. Well, you know, so the question is why? And the answer, I think, is just that, as we've been saying, it's ratings driven. And the easiest way to get these ratings is to go down this path of the Russia story, because it's got the most photogenic and dynamic character at the center of your narrative that people can't get enough of him. It's in a lot of ways, it's like in high school, you know, if the star football player does, you know, like it's what's the word being used today? Cucked, right? C-U-C-K, cuckold. It's like Americans feel cuckold because Putin didn't pick them for the prom. So they're attacking, you know, Hillary wasn't picked for the prom. So she feels cuckold and she's attacking these folks. And you have Time Warner magazine running with the ball on this, and it makes the whole journalistic, you know, output of America seem like we used to get something in grade school called the Weekly Reader. You know, it's news for children. You know, it's not even at that standard.
Well, I think we'll wrap it up here by saying one thing you can see is, again, it all comes down to ratings, and I think RT got it so right during the whole election cycle, so I think that's why the whole Russiagate came down to that national intelligence assessment, that it was all RT, and I think it exposes what it's really all about, which is about ratings, and I think our ratings were a lot higher. They keep on saying, oh, they have no ratings, and nobody watches RT, but they're all powerful.
Yeah, well, it's time for lunch.
Twenty-three minutes.
Really? Yeah, that's good.